Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Big Cat Banter. We have a lot to talk about today. This is Colby, and we have a special guest today. We have James Nichols here from the Hockey Writers and the Nassau Men Hockey podcast. He is an Islanders writer, and we have a lot of Islanders news to go over today, as well as some Panthers things. So, what do you want to say, James?
Thanks for having me on. Excited to get going.
Yeah, definitely. So the first order of business here, since we're both here, is just talk about some of the great GMs of the league over the past year. And as we record this, today is the first anniversary of Bill Zito's hiring by the Florida Panthers. So a lot of Panthers fans do argue that Bill Zito should have won the GM of the Year award over Lou Lamoriello, but how do you feel Lamoriello and Zito's move stack up against each other?
They're both very good general managers, obviously. We saw what, you know, Lamoriello's done for the Islanders and how far the Islanders have gotten. And maybe that has a little bit to do with, you know, who won the award. But Barry Zito has done, you know, just as good a job, in my opinion, bringing on guys like Sam Reinhart, Sam Bennett, who, you know, when he left Calgary and came to the Florida Panthers, he's looked revitalized since his draft year. And then, you know, even moves that you don't think about on the ice, but off the ice, and making Roberto Luongo the head of goalie excellence. I forget the title of the role that they put him in. Do you know offhand?
I think that's like the head of goaltender excellence or something along that line.
Regardless, the role basically is to groom goaltenders, and you're already seeing it translate pretty well with Spencer Knight. He looks fantastic. You might have the most expensive backup in Sergei Bobrovsky next year, but you know it's already paying dividends, as you know, Spencer Knight looks pretty good. So yeah, Barry Zito's doing excellent. It could have gone either way as far as who got GM of the year. But as for 2021, it looks, and the 2021, 2022 season, it looks like Lamoriello is already off to a pretty good start, offloading Andrew Ladd's contract. So we'll see how it shakes out.
Yeah, that was probably one of the more shocking trades of the offseason. I didn't expect he would be able to get that contract off the books with the amount of cap hit it had, and how he hasn't played the past two seasons. You're able to get that contract off the books, only give up a second round pick, and get even more back when getting rid of Nick Leddy.
Yeah.
So those two moves were some of the more surprising moves of the offseason. And then the Islanders are able to recoup most of their roster during the free agency period, which just came out yesterday, actually,
right,
with four players signing their extensions. You had Casey Cizikas, Anthony Beauvillier, Ilya Sorokin, and Kyle Palmieri's extensions all being announced. So which one of those do you think is the biggest steal?
They're all very good contracts. I think the 3x4 is very good for Sorokin, but I would say my favorite contract is probably going to be Anthony Beauvillier's. I know it does buy 1 year of unrestricted free agency, but that's a pretty good number to get him at, because he's still only going to be he's going into his age 24 season. So, you know, there's plenty of upside for him still. He's proven to score in big moments, and he can outplay that contract. And, you know, he'll likely get paid at the end of those 3 years, you know, if he outplays it. But for right now, it's very good value for what he brings to the table.
And then Sorokin's contract's interesting, because you saw Igor Shesterkin get around like 5.6 from the Rangers. So having Sorokin on that 4x5 deal, or I think it is like, is it 4x5?
It's 3x4.
3x4, yeah. That 3x4 deal, that's a huge deal.
Yeah, it's, you know, Sorokin has less time in the NHL under his belt, maybe a little bit more playoff experience just because of the situation he's been put in. But, you know, Sorokin still has a little bit more to show. He has a little bit more to prove. So you're sure to, you know, you have to go into that contract understanding that when he, you know, shines over the next 3 years, which I have no doubt he will, that number is going to creep up a little further.
So it looks like the NHL GMs are more inclined to give those younger goaltenders money now, which should be a thing on the Panthers' docket right now with Spencer Knight. He still has 2 years left on his entry-level contract, but if he keeps playing the way he has in that first season of it, they might have to dish out some money for him too.
Yeah, he's going to be, you know, probably one of the better goaltenders in that division and possibly the league sometime soon. He outplayed Sergei Bobrovsky, which is saying a lot, last season to, you know, essentially win the starter role down the stretch. And it wouldn't be a surprise to see them, you know, take a 50-50 split this season. So 2 years at the cost that the Panthers have to pay him for now seems pretty good if he can continue playing that way. It is a short sample size, so we'll see how he fares in a longer season, maybe more games under his belt. You know, most expect someone like Spencer Knight to regress to the means, but he has a great profile. He's a first-round pick, a high first-round pick, so the expectation is there for him to perform and succeed at this level.
Yeah, and we saw something similar when Andrei Vasilevskiy came into the league. He performed at a high level at a young age and kind of just stuck there. And he's a player that the Islanders fans and you alike have seen a lot in the playoffs over the past 2 years. So do you think that development can kind of match that Andrei Vasilevskiy form?
It's tough to compare anybody to Andrei Vasilevskiy. He's the best in the league in between the pipes and the net. But you could see something similar as far as, you know, what's going on in the net for Florida, where maybe Spencer Knight pushes Sergei Bobrovsky out the door. You know, that's what happened with Ben Bishop. Vasilevskiy was so good that Ben Bishop was moved to Dallas. It's going to be really hard to move that contract that Bobrovsky has. If it gets to that point, but you could see something similar happen. You know, maybe the Panthers have to retain money or whatnot, but you could see a team who's in need of a goaltender come knocking and say, hey, we need a goaltender. And, you know, it doesn't look like you're utilizing Bobrovsky too much if Spencer Knight continues to play at the level he is playing at. You know, like I said earlier, we'll see how he fares over a longer 82-game season.
I mean, that is all contingent on Bobrovsky, like, even performing to anything like his old self, though. I mean, his past two playoff performances between his first-round loss in the qualifying round to the Islanders and the first-round loss to the Lightning, he had a sub-900 save percentage, and he wasn't looking too hot. So he wasn't really performing down the stretch, and that's why a guy like Spencer Knight had to step up for him.
Right.
So that contract's going to be hard to move, even if you do have a situation like Spencer Knight taking over. You kind of have that anchor on the team now because of that contract Dale Talon signed.
Right, exactly. So it's going to be, you know, interesting to see how it plays out. The Panthers probably are kicking themselves. I mean, it's not Barry Zito's contract to kick himself about, but he's probably not too happy that he has that situation to deal with, so.
Yeah, it just depends on if you can see some sort of life out of Bobrovsky after the past two seasons have been off for him. But we'll have to see. But speaking of goaltending, we have a poll going on, and one of the two finalists for the greatest Panthers of all time have had some time in an Islander sweater. So our poll has Alexander Barkov, the number one seed, going off against Roberto Luongo, the number three seed. Is there much you can say about Luongo and his time with the Islanders and how he developed after he got traded to the Panthers?
It's interesting how his career played out, right? It was a short stint with the Islanders. They gave up on him rather quickly. He moves on to the Panthers. But he's most known for his time with Vancouver, where he took them on a deep playoff run, almost, you know, claimed a cup. And then, you know, he goes back to the Panthers. So it's interesting to see how he traveled around the league. I don't know if he's the greatest Panther of all time. I mean, you already have Jonathan Huberdeau, a current Panther, at the top of the points list for Florida, right? But Alexander Barkov is obviously there. He might be their best player of all time. I think you have to give an honorable mention to Olli Jokinen, who was there for a while as well, and he did a lot for Florida. So as far as all-time great, you know, like I said, Luongo wasn't part of, you know, his prime wasn't part of the with the Florida Panthers. It was with Vancouver. So I don't know. I don't know if he's an all time great Panther. So in my opinion, maybe it goes to Barkov there, and he's you know still young and still playing for the team.
The thing with Luongo is he spent 11 years in Florida, and his numbers with Florida kind of mirror his numbers with Vancouver. Like, he had a lot of his prime years before he went to Vancouver over in 2005 and 2004 with the Panthers, and he performed very well. He had a career 919 save percentage, which is the same as his career save percentage in Vancouver. He played 11 years in Florida compared to his 8 years in Vancouver. So yeah, he actually did spend a lot more time in Florida. And I guess that is why Florida was the team to retire his number first rather than Vancouver.
Yeah, that's a good point too. You know, he did have more time. And I guess team success is part of what you measure, or maybe not what you measure, or part of what you think of when you think of all-time greats. They didn't really have too much success with him while he was there in net, whereas he had more success while he was with Vancouver. But no doubt that he Luongo did bring a lot to, and still is bringing a lot to, the Florida Panthers.
Yeah, and as a goaltender coach now, he's helping Spencer Knight out. And yeah. But Barkov is the first Panther to win the Selke Trophy. He's
right.
One of the only Panthers to win one of the major awards. I think one of the only other ones is the Richard going to Pavel Bure.
Yep.
But he has the longevity. He has the success. He's been a captain for longer than anyone else in Panthers history. So Barkov is probably a very good candidate to win that poll. And, I mean, for good reason. And by the way, happy birthday, Alexander Barkov. He's 26. He turns 26 this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the younger captains in the league, and one of the more underrated players. Like I said earlier, you know, he's, and you said he won one of the first major awards, aside from Pavel Bure, for the Panthers, and he's only getting better every year. I remember when he was first picked by the Panthers, and you know, a lot of people were questioning what the Panthers just did, but turns out that was probably one of the best picks they've ever made in a draft.
Yeah, he's been the franchise cornerstone ever since he broke out after his rookie season. He was one of the leaders on that team that took the Islanders to six games, arguably should have been seven at the very least if the Trocheck call wasn't called back. I was an Islanders fan at the time, so even I'm kind of unbiased about that. But right. Just watching all of his career grow like that, it's been interesting to see, and he's already one of the greatest players in Panthers history, if not the greatest, and you wonder if he's staying or not after that contract's over. I mean, I saw a report from David Dwork saying that contract isn't as close as it seems to be from being done, but Bill Zito is hopeful that it gets signed before the season starts, so it should be interesting to see what happens on the Barkov front.
Yeah, I think that Panthers fans should feel confident in Bill Zito just as much as, you know, Islander fans have confidence in Lou Lamoriello. And I think I called him Barry Zito before, mixing up my head coach with the Florida Panthers GM. But now that I'm saying it out loud, I'm like, oh, I think I did that. But yeah, no, I would say that the Florida Panthers fans should have just as much confidence in Bill Zito as the Islander fans have in Lou Lamoriello.
Yeah, it was kind of hard for Islanders fans for a bit after the first month of free agency. Nothing comes out. Then you have that Pellick contract, which looks absolutely beautiful in comparison yeah. to all of the other contracts that were signed. Like, you had guys like Seth Jones and John Klingberg being signed at like $9.5 million cap hits. And then right before Pellick's supposed to go to arbitration, you have him sign an 8-year deal worth $5.75 million.
Yeah.
So he's really took that and he wants to stay, especially if he's taken a cheaper contract by almost half from people that he's pretty much better than. I think you can argue he's better than Seth Jones. The numbers are out there. A lot of advanced stats don't really like Seth Jones, while Pellick's a better defensive defender. So that has to be one of the biggest steals of a contract there by Lou Lamoriello, penning Pelech to that kind of contract.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how you measure the contracts. You know, Seth Jones is a completely different type of player than Adam Pelech, but the sentiment is the same, right? You're trying to pay for a true number one defenseman, which, you know, there's question as to whether Adam Pelech is that or if it's Ryan Pulock. Some will say it doesn't matter. They're great as a first pairing tandem. But, you know, Seth Jones brings other intangibles than Pelech brings. You know, he scores more. He's more offensive, whereas Pelech, like you said, is just strictly defense. So I'm not sold that there's not that side of Pelech. I think he's still growing. And, you know, he showed a little bit of that last year. And I think he can maybe take another step this season. But, you know, you're talking about two different kinds of players. Regardless, though, after seeing, you know, Darnell Nurse get paid $9.5 million, Zach Werenski, Seth Jones, you know, Dougie Hamilton, all these guys got upwards of $9.5 million. It's definitely a steal of a contract for Lou Lamoriello. In the early goings of his tenure as Islanders GM, maybe he had to convince a couple of players with paying them a little more to come to the island because they hadn't proven anything yet. You know, that's why Semyon Varlamov got paid what he got paid. Leo Komarov got paid what he got paid. But now that they're winning and now that they have success and now that, you know, nobody even wants to leave, now we can say, all right, well, do you want to go somewhere and get paid more money? Or do you want to take a little bit of a haircut, still make good money, and possibly lift the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, that's something you've also been seeing in Florida, too, over the offseason. Like, they got Brandon Montour on what looks like a bit of a steal. They got Carter Verhaeghe after a very good season that looked like a kind of a breakout season on only $4 million. Like, that could be a very good breakout contract right there that could be very, very reasonable for them going forward. If he has another big year on that $1 million deal, you'll have him on $4 million for the next three or so seasons while he's on the first line with Alexander Barkov potentially. So it's just another thing seeing these teams like the Islanders and Panthers used to be the jokes of the league at one point. Remember all the attendance jokes made about both teams, seeing them now be one of the more premier franchises in the league.
Yeah, they both turned their franchises around well, and it starts at the top, you know, Zito and Lamoriello helping get that started for each franchise. And unfortunately, you know, when other franchises start to grow, others take a back seat. And, you know, now we're seeing teams like the Coyotes, who are unfortunately the laughingstock of the NHL right now, you know, they need some guidance. So it's almost like when you pluck one good GM from a team and send them to another, there's a trickle effect throughout the NHL. And there is always a team that's like, what's going on over there? You know,
that is
true.
It also starts with ownership too. Like the Islanders, yeah, ever since John Ledecky and Scott Malkin took over, those two were very dedicated to fixing up that franchise. It took a little bit, had Garth Snow over there, and it looked like it was tapering off once Tavares left. But once Tavares left, they really put the hammer into the nail right there, and they signed. They took on Lou Lamoriello. They were able to get Barry Trotz in. And then from there, they're able to secure the new arena, build a winning team. And that's just one thing from ownership. They're willing to pour the money out to build whatever team they want. And yep, that's a huge, huge thing for the Islanders. And it looks like it's a similar thing with the Panthers with Sifu, too, as they're paying for a new practice facility in Fort Lauderdale rather than the one over in Coral Springs that's a bit further from the arena. And they are working to just build the right roster for the Panthers too, being able to get the right people in. So it seems like when ownership is committed to building a team, that's where everything else follows.
Yeah, I think it's important that, you know, both ownership groups in Florida and on Long Island, they're hands off. They hired GMs that they trusted to get the job done, and they know that going into, you know, this process that they were going to have to, you know, spend money to make money. And in doing so, for, you know, in the Islanders case, you get the new arena, upgrade the practice facility, sign some players. When you do things like that, and it leads to team success and, you know, puts more fans in the seats, it can only do better for your franchise. So, you know, it took a while for the Islanders to get there. You know, more often than not, they were looking for their next first line sniper off the waiver wire. That's no longer a thing. Not that they've gotten that first line sniper yet. They're still looking for it, but you know, that's due to the times. It's not like Lamoriello hasn't proven he's not willing to throw the bag at a player, i.e. Artemi Panarin. But yeah, you know, these ownership groups know we have to be hands off, trust who we hired, and be willing to spend money to make money.
Yeah, John Ledecky is probably the least hands off owner. He's around everywhere. He's challenging Sparky the Dragon for the spot as the Islanders mascot. Like, yeah. You see him all over the place. If you're on Long Island, you see John Ledecky. And like, even I was at an Islanders game when they were playing the Blue Jackets. And lo and behold, I'm sitting down at the glass level, and right next to me is John Ledecky. So he is out there talking with people. He's out there sitting with the fans and being that type of guy. So that seems like the perfect person you'd want representing your fan base.
Yeah, I was at Game 6 against the Bruins when the Islanders won, you know, this past postseason. They eliminated the Bruins, and I'm walking down from the press to, you know, go conduct some interviews, and you know, as I'm walking, I see, you know, someone brush by me real quick. They were running, and I turn around, and who do I see? I see John Ledecky running to a crowd of fans. He knew exactly where the blue and orange army was going to be, who are the fans up in the stands. They get season tickets every year. They're, I think, section 329. They're always banging the drum and starting chants and the Hey Josh Bailey song. He knew exactly where they were going to be. He ran to them and pretty much threw himself into a mosh pit, jumping, cheering, throwing things in the corridors of Nassau Coliseum. And as soon as I saw that, I ran, you know, right over to it with them, and you know, got a nice video of that, of him celebrating with the fans of you know, of beating the Bruins in Game 6, and you know, he started the chant of "We want Tampa." So it's really cool to see. Yes, as much as he is hands off with, you know, his general manager, he's very hands on with the fans.
Yeah, like, having something like that's just beautiful. And how he cares about the team. You know, yeah. You know, he's going to put however much money he wants to put in to make that team successful. And you see that coming to fruition now at the new building opening this November. It's going to be a very great venue to be in and to cover games in, for sure, with that being lined up soon.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you couldn't ask for a better leader. And, you know, he and Scott Malkin did excellent jobs in figuring out who should lead the team beneath them, so that they can take a back seat and just, you know, do what's necessary for the franchise off the ice.
Another interesting thing that we've seen this offseason is just how Lou Lamoriello already had some of these contracts signed, but it just kind of kept them quiet for a long time. How has that been for you while covering the team? It's like you've been one of the more active guys on Twitter trying to decipher Lou Lamoriello.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not easy. And I'm, you know, fingers crossed, I'm hoping not to get a phone call from somebody, you know, because I do find some things out, and I do, you know, tweet out a little bit of information. So far it's all been good, which is nice. But it's been tough because, you know, he's been secretive as far as what he's doing. Which is the Lou Lamoriello way. I can't fault him for that. It's how he operates. And I don't think it's a bad way to operate. I think he's trying to do what he can to improve the team. And if that means he has to maybe hide, you know, how much money he has on his cap versus how much money he's willing to spend, you know, it can only better them. So I've never doubted him since he started here on Long Island. And you know, I'm not going to start doubting him now. He's only proven that he can get the job done. He pretty much did it this offseason. You know, not many believed that he could bring back every single restricted free agent plus Casey Cizikas. But look what he did. He brought them all back. So, you know, and in addition to Zach Parise. So he knows how to get the job done. He's going to do it his way. It's tough to cover because, you know, sometimes I'm sitting around, you know, scrounging for information. But, you know, part of the job is what it is. And, eventually I get it done, because eventually it does leak out, whether it's the day before training camp or maybe September 1st instead of July 1st.
Yeah, and I don't even think the Andy Green contract's been announced yet. after all this time, even if that's a move that was even sent to the registry to get the Islanders in deal for the expansion draft. Yeah, it's still something that's never actually been announced by the team.
It wasn't announced by the team. It's not official per the league, but it's known that it's a 1-year deal at $750K. It's not filed, much like Parise's. He stated yesterday it's not filed, but it is signed, and they just have to send it to the league.
Yeah, so Parise is pretty much officially in with the Islanders, as we thought. I mean, there was that one day in free agency where we thought he was going to the New Jersey Devils because of this one Philadelphia writer that we saw on Twitter.
That was a very confusing tweet because it said something along the lines of Parise is headed to Philadelphia to join the Devils. And I just couldn't make sense of A, the location versus the team, and B, a source of mine had told me, very credible, that it was already done. He was already signed to Long Island, and I had already reported that. So I was just very confused when I saw that report, and I was like, okay, now I got to cross-reference and go back to my guy, which I did, and he said that's definitely not true. I can confirm that. So it was a very weird instance. He did soon delete that tweet, and he said afterwards, he goes, I still confuse myself with where Lou Lamoriello is. He was thinking he was the GM of the Devils, which he is not. He is the GM of the Islanders, and where he got Philadelphia from beats me.
Yeah, I guess somewhere in the mix of the free agent's frenzy moves, we lost the move of the New Jersey Devils to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Not sure how we missed that one, but having two NHL teams in Philadelphia is something else.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's big enough for anybody, for two teams in Philadelphia. I think they might beat each other up more than they play hockey games.
Yeah, I mean, Philadelphia fans already beat themselves up enough with one team. They might have a whole war out in the streets there with two teams. I mean, you see that with the Philadelphia Eagles fans throwing batteries at Santa Claus and all that stuff. So I couldn't imagine two teams over there.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
Yeah, and then just another team I want to touch on in the Metropolitan Division from the Islanders' perspective, the New Jersey Devils and the amount of moves they made this offseason, bringing in Thomas Tatar, I believe, and they brought in Dougie Hamilton. They improved that team a lot. How does that make that Metropolitan Division deeper, and how does that make the Eastern Conference scarier as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Metro has been a beast since, the Islanders became as astute in that division as they are. And then, you know, the division just seems to keep getting better. You know, we saw the Capitals win the Cup a couple of years ago, right before Barry Trotz came in. They're still a juggernaut. The Penguins are always good. And, you know, the Rangers are up and coming. The Hurricanes are back, and they're going to be, despite losing Dougie Hamilton, they're going to be very good. But the Devils, yeah, I mean, I'm intrigued to see how they are this year. I think they're going to be much better. I don't think that's a guaranteed 2 points when you look at the schedule and you say, oh, we're playing the Devils. You know, that's 2 points. Mackenzie Blackwood's very good. He's probably one of the better goaltenders in this league right now. You know, he had a very good second half of the year last year, and I think that's probably more accurate to who he is as a goalie rather than the first half of the year. But, you know, Jack Hughes could finally break out. I know he's had a 50-point season, but I think he's got a lot more as a number one overall pick. Nico Hischier, if he's healthy and he could stay healthy, is an excellent number two and the captain of that team. And they have guys like Alexander Holtz coming through the pipeline who could really score. So the Devils have a lot of good young weapons, like that kid Yegor Sharangovich, who I think is from Belgium. He's a fantastic story. He came over from Belgium, tried out to, you know, he was drafted by the Devils, but wasn't expected to break out as soon as he did, and now he's one of their better players. So I think there's a lot to what the Devils have going on in their organization right now. They're up and coming. I don't know if they're a playoff team yet, but I don't think they're an easy 2 points either.
Yeah, it's he was Sharon Govich was from Belarus, by the way. Same
Belarus, right?
Same place as Mikhail Grabowski,
right?
But like it seems like there's pretty much no easy 2 points left in the Eastern Conference aside from like Buffalo and Columbus, maybe. But even then, I mean, there's never a time when there's easy 2 points. You gotta win the game first before you start talking about it. So
yeah,
you gotta. Like, the whole Eastern Conference is pretty deep, and that's going to make the wild card race interesting. Like, you have to finish in the top three teams in your division. Otherwise, it's going to be a huge, huge, huge race going into those final two spots in the East.
Yeah, I think, like it always is, the East is going to be a juggernaut. You can likely count Buffalo out, but, you know, as for 1 through 7, it's anyone's. It's anyone's division, and it's going to be a tough fight. I've seen a lot of projections have the Islanders taking the division. I've seen a lot of projections, you know, with where the Islanders maybe are fourth in the division. There's really no clear cut winner for the Metropolitan this year. Everyone seemingly got better.
Yeah, like between the Metropolitan and the Atlantic divisions, I think only like Buffalo, Columbus, and maybe Detroit are those teams where you're like, okay, that's kind of an easy win right there, but between every other team in that division, it's going to be like a 5 or 6 team race for that those two spots. Like usually during a normal year, you can kind of count on those two wild card spots being from the Metropolitan Division, being like a combination of like the Flyers, the Rangers, those type of teams. But then you got a pretty big 4 team race between the Panthers and the Lightning and the Maple Leafs and the Bruins.
Yeah.
So, like, you could possibly see one of those teams miss the playoffs next year, like a Boston team that lost Tuukka Rask. Well, granted, their offense did get deeper. They were able to get Nick Foligno. But that's another team that could be in for a rough go after losing to the Islanders in the second round last year.
Yeah, I think the Bruins retooled pretty well this offseason. But, they're not the big, bad Bruins that they used to be, even at 44 years old, Zdeno Chara not playing for them hurt. Torrey Krug's not there anymore. Charlie McAvoy took a big step forward this past season, so that was very good for them. Now they have a full season of Taylor Hall. We'll see how they fill in the Krejci hole. If that Thomas Hertl rumor is true and he wants out, I can't think of a better replacement for Thomas Krejci. David Krejci. Other than Thomas Hertl, it's pretty much almost the same exact player, and he's 27 years old, so probably something that they should look into. But yeah, I mean, the Atlantic Division is becoming as much of a juggernaut as the Metro, so the two wild card spots for the East is no clear cut spots either. So it'll be interesting to see how a full season after two seasons plays out.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of Zdeno Chara, he's another left-handed defenseman on the free agent market. And the Panthers and the Islanders both have holes on that left side with Letty leaving and the Panthers only really having two natural left-handed defensemen in their core with Keith Yandle being bought out. Is he a guy you think signs in the open market or do you think he's done?
I think he'll be back. If he wasn't coming back, I think we'd know by now. Getting pretty close to training camp. I think he'll sign somewhere soon. As for if it's the Islanders or the Panthers, I've heard the Panthers are likely to land him. You know, everybody kind of likes to equate the fact that he hasn't signed yet with Lou Lamoriello and if he's keeping it a secret. So did the Islanders sign him possibly? And I just don't know if that's true. I think he's probably more of a fit for the Panthers. I don't think the Islanders can afford to have him on their blue line for the sole purpose of having Andy Green there, another 38, maybe 39-year-old defenseman. You know, adding a 44-year-old defenseman to your top six is tough. It's possible, in my opinion, the Islanders probably look externally, maybe through trade, to maybe get a top four defenseman. I don't know that Chara would fit unless he's splitting time with Andy Green. And I don't know if the Islanders want to use what little cap they have left to bring Chara in, whereas they need to, maybe shore up some cap space to bring in a top four defenseman, maybe someone like Hampus Lindholm in Anaheim, or they can possibly look somewhere else like Seattle, who has an abundance of defensemen, and even Carolina.
Who from Carolina would be an interesting candidate to move? I mean, they're a competitive team, and I don't know who they'd be willing to give up, especially after giving up Dougie Hamilton.
My co-host from Nassman Hockey, John Zella, likes to say Ian Cole, who I believe is with Carolina. He thinks he'd be a good fit. Might not cost you too much. But I say look towards Seattle, who have Jeremy Lauzon. I like him as a defenseman who played in a similar system last season with the Bruins. I know that Kraken just drafted him, but they have a surplus on the blue line, so they have to do something there. And I could see Lauzon probably fitting in well with the Islanders, and he's only 24 years old. So you get a good aged player, and he knows he comes in a good cap hit as well, and he plays a similar system. He kind of knows how to play the Barry Trotz code.
Yeah, that's also true. And another player that's interesting that hasn't been moved yet is Vladimir Tarasenko. The Panthers were one of the teams that were interested in him. Doesn't look like it's happening now, as they're kind of close to the cap. And they're looking more for a defenseman now that Sam Reinhart's in the fold. But do you think Tarasenko's still going to be on the move, or do you think he's going to be staying in St. Louis?
I mean, the writing's on the wall. He's going to be moved. I know a ton of Islander fans want to hear that he's going to the Islanders. At this point, I don't know if that can happen. You know, the forward group is so full. You have Beauvillier is back. Palmieri is back. Lee is coming back off of injury. Parise is coming in. Cizikas is back. Travis Zajac is likely coming back. Michael Dalcol is coming back. You have Kiefer Bellows. You have Otto Koivula. You just got Richard Panik. There's just no room for Vladimir Tarasenko. I don't know that the Islanders are going to trade Josh Bailey. I know they just left him unprotected. Maybe he would be part of the trade that gets Vladimir Tarasenko to come on the way back. But I don't know that the Islanders want to do that. I think they respect him as a person. They respect him in the organization, and they might want him to retire an Islander. So to be honest, I have heard that teams are looking at Tarasenko's health reports and just aren't liking what they see. So it's an interesting situation. We'll see how it works out. I don't know if he's going to be moved before training camp. I don't know if he's going to be moved before day one of the season, but I don't think he's going to be playing for the Blues.
What are some teams you think would go after that? I mean, those health reports do look concerning, and that return would probably be not looking good. So,
yeah, I've heard New Jersey is possible. I've heard Carolina is possible. You know, a lot of teams in the East are looking to acquire somebody like him, but they also don't want to pay maybe what they're asking just due to the health concerns. So he does have 2 years left on his contract. What's difficult about moving his deal is that he's owed $9.5 million in real money, whereas his cap hit is 7.5. But you know, the team that does acquire him will be responsible for the extra $2.5 million that he is owed.
Yeah, especially in a COVID world where a lot of teams haven't had fans in the building up until a certain point, or had limited amounts of fans in the building, haven't been able to get the money to pay some of these contracts. And you'd think for some GMs, for some owners, it's not worth it to take on that type of guy, especially with the concerns. So I think that's a situation where you'd want to get the Blues to retain some of that money too.
Right. And that will make the cost of acquiring him higher. So, you know, you have to shed a contract if you're the Islanders, like a Leo Komarov or a Thomas Hickey, to make the numbers work. But with that, you don't really have too many draft picks. You've sold your first round draft picks for the past 3 seasons now, so you don't really have any first round picks, despite, you know, Atu Ratu dropping down to 52nd overall, which seems like it was a good pick. Many project him as a second line center, which if you can get that in the second round of the draft, that's a steal. But you know, no first round picks for the past couple of seasons, and you don't want to sell all your assets before the trade deadline this year, when, you know, going into February, you might look back and say, well, I need some assets because I need somebody to replace somebody who got injured, much like how Anders Lee did last season.
Yeah, and then Palmieri wound up being a guy who stuck, and he scored a lot during the playoffs, and him being a Long Island guy coming back yesterday, I mean, that's another guy who's been a very valuable member to the team, and he looks like he's probably going to slide on that first line next to Barzal and Lee.
It'll be interesting to see how that works out. I had said a while ago, you know, knowing that he was coming back, that I would be intrigued to see how he fits on a first line with Lee and Barzal. But he plays a very similar style to Lee. I think he's better suited playing next to Peugeot, maybe with Parise. And I have stated in the past, I think Wahlstrom would benefit from playing some top 6 minutes. So whether that's Bailey slides up to line one to play with Barzal and Lee, or they give the kid a shot and let him let it fly on Barzal's right wing. I think that that formula works a little bit better just because you have Barzal who can dish the puck. You have Lee who is fighting in front of the net, and you have Wahlstrom who's got that lethal shot. And, you know, you could see him score 30 plus goals next to Barzal. And you have a similar situation on the third line if you have Palmieri down with Peugeot and Parise. Parise is going to shoot. Peugeot is going to just do what he does. And Palmieri is going to be battling in front. So it seems like a very good formula. And I don't think that Wahlstrom's defensive game is as, you know, faulted as many think it is because of what happened in the playoffs. So a lot of people see that, you know, Barry Trotz didn't put Oliver Wahlstrom back in after he was cleared to play, wasn't injured any longer. But I think that had more to do with J.G. Peugeot's injury, keeping Travis Zajac in, another guy who could take faceoffs. And it was clear that J.G. Peugeot wasn't himself. He was playing hurt, and they needed another guy who could, you know, maybe bring a little bit more of what Peugeot could bring. A guy who could bring more of what Peugeot could bring rather than someone like Wahlstrom, who's going to score goals, which ended up biting them. But, you know, ultimately, I think that was the train of thought. They wanted somebody more responsible, like Zajac, to play with Peugeot just because of his injury.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And you have a guy like Wahlstrom playing with Barzal. That's a combination that's very interesting to me that could translate into a lot of goals. And I mean, it's something I said about Owen Tippett with Jonathan Huberdeau. That's a similar combination between the two that worked with the Panthers last season during the playoffs, that Tippett was able to get his shots off, get in the right positions. He's a guy who's able to get in those positions, and he was able to work wonders with the Panthers during the playoffs. And Huberdeau played well with a player who's like that. So you get a player like Wahlstrom who can get into those positions, get in those dirty areas, and shoot the puck. And he knows how he's a smart hockey player. He knows where he's going. He's a pretty big kid. He's a pretty physical kid as well. I've seen him get physical. Yeah. So, like, that's a player that you want to have on that top line next to Barzal, because A, he's a guy that can be physical. He can defend Barzal if someone tries going after him. And B, kids can score. He's not slow by any means, and he can get into those positions where Barzal can give him the puck.
Yeah, and, you know, you heard it from Wahlstrom himself, you know, when he was asked last year about his game. It was music to Barry Trotz's ears when he said, "I'm falling in love with my game, you know, doing all the little things the right way and becoming a true 200-foot hockey player." You know, that's just got to make Barry Trotz smile ear to ear. And, you know, hopefully after what could have been a big off season for him, maybe put on some muscle, you know, gained a little bit of speed, comes into training camp focused, comes in shape. He could, in my opinion, win that first line right wing spot with no problem. You know, not to say that Palmieri won't give him a bit of a fight, but I don't think it's clear cut that it's Palmieri's. I think there's definitely going to be a little bit of an internal battle, which is totally fine. Friendly competition only makes us better. And either way, I mean, the deployment of the team, you know, John and I say it all the time on NHP, you know, the Islanders basically have three second lines and a third line. You know, the time on ice is not that different, not how, you know, other teams really utilize it. You're talking 2 to 3 minutes a difference between each of the four lines. So, you know, it's not to say that if he's on the first line, he's going to be playing a ton more than Palmieri, just because Trotz likes to roll all four lines.
Yeah, and you'd see the Panthers trying to do a similar thing over there. Right, they have Anton Lundell coming over to compete for that third line spot. You have a guy like Joe Thornton even coming in to try to compete for some time. I think he could probably be a fourth liner. But you have a pretty deep team there. And you have Barkov and Huberto on separate lines, to where you have two first lines almost, with between that Bennett and Barkov line being the Bennett-Huberto line. And then you have Barkov playing next to Sam Reinhart and Carter Verhaeghe. And then on that third line, you could possibly see a young guy like Anton Lundell playing with Frank Vetrano and Anthony Duclair on that line. So those are three very good lines. And then you have a fourth line, which has guys like Mason Marchment and Anthony, or not Anthony, Noel Achari, and just a deep core like that.
Yeah, I think that, you know, as much as the analytical writers and everyone who focuses so much on analytics, when they look at the Islanders, they say, you know, or they have always in the past said, you know, they are not in favor when it comes to analytics. But I think the Islanders have also flipped that script. And, you know, even guys like Dom Luchesin of the Athletics says to himself now, I'm going to project them the same way I always do. And the analytics aren't going to say that they're going to do well, but they're going to prove that wrong, and they're going to do it anyway. And it just goes to show that analytics aren't everything. They're a great tool to use. I use them as well. But the eye test says a lot. And rolling four lines like Trotz does has pretty much shown everyone throughout the league that that's definitely something that you probably want to practice, keeping your, you know, all 12 of your forwards fresh, all six of your defensemen fresh, maybe giving some guys a little bit more of a responsibility with some more time on ice. It's a model that has proven to be successful under Barry Trotz. So it's no wonder that, you know, a team like the Florida Panthers, who maybe don't bring in superstars like the New York Islanders do, follow the same model. And now that it's proving to have been successful, you know, now the players are starting to trickle in. Now the players don't want to leave. Now the players want to play for the New York Islanders. And you could see that same thing happen for the Florida Panthers.
Yeah, like you had Joe Thornton go up there and be like, yeah, I wanted to come to Florida to win a championship, which is probably one of the more surprising things you've heard, especially with a team that hasn't won a playoff series in 25 years, as we saw the Islanders in that same spot. I mean, the development curve for the Panthers is starting to come there even before the winning has happened in the playoffs. Like, the players are seeing how this team is developing. They see Bill Zito's plan, and they're buying into it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Panthers are young enough to see that they're an up-and-coming team, and they're actually at that point now where you could say they're a legitimate contender. And only, you know, adding a guy like Joe Thornton, who's, you know, at the end of his career and has been there and done that, is only going to help them, because he comes in with leadership. He comes in with pedigree. He knows what it takes to win in the playoffs. He's seen success. He's seen failure. He knows how to get through it, and he can mentor these young guys. He knows he's coming in as a fourth liner. He knows he's coming in to coach the young guys through an 82-game stretch on the mental aspect, the mental grind of it, the physical grind of it. But he's coming in to do all of that, plus possibly win a Stanley Cup, because it's true. Guys like Barkov, guys like Huberto, even Duclair, who just signed a new deal, they have a lot of skill. They have a lot of grit, and they're not gonna be a pushover. That Florida versus Tampa Bay rivalry is now true. It's not an easy 2 points when you face the Florida Panthers anymore.
Yeah, and like they've just developed this pedigree over the league where they're a premier team in the league, and it's pretty fun to see two different Florida teams be some of those teams in a league that's played on ice. I mean, you go around Florida, there's a lot of people who don't know much about the Panthers, and right. They're like, oh, hockey's not a real sport, but you have two big Florida teams in the league, and that's something that's huge for the growth of the league.
Yeah, it's a good time to be a Florida or Tampa Bay hockey fan, and I don't mean just, you know, a Florida Panthers fan. The state of Florida, it's a good time to be a hockey fan.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for joining us, James. I really appreciate it. Anything else you want to say?
No, I had a good time. Thank you for letting me join, and hope that everybody listening enjoyed as well.
You plug your socials as well and talk about your podcast real quick before I put the ending in.
Yeah, you can find me at James Nichols NYI on Twitter. You can also find my podcast at Nassau Men Hockey Podcast. That's Nassau Men Hockey Podcast. We're on all socials. We're on all podcast platforms that you can find. We also have a link tree on our Twitter page on at Nassau Men Hockey, where you can find all of our links for podcasts and everything. And if you're an Islander fan, we actually just started a Discord where if you want to come and interact with other Islander fans, Colby joined. I think he's enjoying it so far. It's a safe space. You can come in, you can talk. We have moderators, we have bots who make sure that there's no hate or anything going around. We created it so we can interact with you guys, the fans, and it's seem so far it's been fun. It's only a day old, but so far it's been fun.
Yeah, it's been a fun time. I think they even welcome Panthers guys like me, although you guys can't see it on the podcast, but there's Islanders jerseys behind me. I am sorry to my listeners, but that's just how I grew up. But anyways, thank you guys for listening. You can find us on Twitter at Big Cat Banter. You can find me on Twitter at Colby D Guy. We're missing Joey today, but you can find him on Twitter at Mr. Underscore Joester. As always, you can check out the Hockey Writers for some of the greatest hockey content you can find. That's where both James and I work, and this podcast is a part of the Hockey Writers Podcast Network, so we're very thankful for them for elevating our platform. We'll see you guys next week as prospect development camp starts next week, like 8 days from today. So we'll see you next week.